This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you're listening to Good Things, our weekly show where we talk to good people who are doing good things. I'm Dashran Johan. In December 2020, the NGO Family Frontiers filed a constitutional challenge with the High Court, seeking a declaration that Malaysian women married to foreign spouses can automatically confer citizenship on their children who are born overseas. As it stood, Malaysia was one of 25 countries in the world that deny women and men equal right to confer nationality on their children. However, in a landmark ruling yesterday, the High Court declared that children born overseas to Malaysian moms are also eligible for citizenship. Joining me on the show today is Bina Ramanan. She's the co-founder of Family Frontiers and one of the activists who has been working incredibly hard for more than a decade on issues pertaining to the rights of transnational and binational families. Welcome to the show, Bina. How are you doing?
Thank you so much, Darshan, and thank you for having me on BFM. Indeed, it's a pleasure to come and actually unpack what went on these past few years.
Yeah.
So thank you.
No, the honor is mine, Bina. I want to start off by congratulating you and, you know, a hearty congratulations on winning the case. How are you feeling after yesterday's court ruling? What is the significance of its ruling and what does it mean to you personally?
Personally, to me, it means giving hope to the Malaysian mothers whose children were previously denied Malaysian citizenship. They did not have any sustainable solutions being offered to them. And we have a small group on WhatsApp of about 200 mothers. Many of them are here in Malaysia, and the anguish they go through is so painful for us. I mean, it's a daily anxiety they are going through, whether it's visa renewal, you know, because their children are on yearly student passes like any other foreigner, not like a Malaysian. And many of them cannot even get admitted to national schools. And, you know, until they lose about 2 years every year. And so it means that these children will have a normal life after this, once they acquire Malaysian citizenship, because they also have difficulties accessing healthcare. And the mothers, some of them are single mothers and have to pay foreigner rates, which is a lot to pay for hospitalization of their children. And I mean, they are Malaysians and they should have been accorded Malaysian citizenship, just like any other Malaysian man. So this decision will especially bring relief to single mothers who were fearful of coming down to Malaysia and facing the challenges of bringing up non-citizen children in the country. But according to the judgment, this decision does not only apply to the six plaintiffs. It also applies to women in similar circumstances. And that's the thing, because there were a few hundred of them whom we know personally. And these were women who, you know, delivered their babies overseas. Primarily, some of them just went to work, you know, and didn't realize the law is going to discriminate them, and they will be struggling through. Some of the children are 14, 16 years old, and they have been putting in applications repeatedly. So this will mean that they will now, these mothers will now be able to obtain citizenship for their children in the same way as Malaysian men do, citizenship by operation of law. And it means that mothers will not have to go through the tedious process of applying for their visas under 15-2 or applying for long-term social visit passes for their children. This is a historic decision where children of Malaysian women will enjoy the same rights as children of Malaysian men.
You know, I was talking to a friend yesterday night, and she was saying it's the same thing she her family experienced because her sister, elder sister, is Malaysian, married someone of Indian nationality, and they were working in Singapore for a bit. And nobody, I feel a lot of people don't think about these laws until it reaches a point where, you know, they are in the situation. And she was saying it's the same thing. They don't even realize what the laws are, right? And then when her sister was pregnant, pregnant and about to give birth and all of that. And then only they realize like, oh my God, there's going to be this huge problem. And luckily for them, they were only in Singapore, which means they could easily just come back to Malaysia just like that. And then, you know, give birth to the baby and then move on. And then things sort of resolve itself. But, you know, like you mentioned, if you're coming from other countries, countries that are further, especially if you're single moms, you don't have the support system, it is incredibly challenging, right? How long have activists such as yourself and those before you been pushing for this?
Frankly, this situation has existed since independence, and many of them don't realize it. That being said, Darshan, actually Singapore, for children born in Singapore, there's a special procedure as well. I think that comes under 1D, if I'm not mistaken. And so it's a quicker process than children who are born in other countries. But I wonder whether this lady actually asked in the High Commission, and I wonder whether this process is also being followed. You know, sometimes the implementation is what matters. And frankly, just like how you said about your friend, 35 years ago, my Malaysian sister-in-law, who was married to a non-Malaysian, returned to Malaysia to give birth to her child. And when I was pregnant, my late father-in-law told me that if I wanted to return to India to have my child and deliver in my mom's place, there would be no problem for Malaysian citizenship because my husband could just come to India and register the child. I was stunned. I was simply stunned by this inequality. Imagine a foreign woman can get citizenship for Malaysian citizenship for her child, but a Malaysian woman was not able to obtain that same citizenship for her child. And, you know, who carries the burden of childbirth and childbearing? It is the mother who, in her pregnant state, putting her health, her life, and the life of her unborn child at risk, at great risk from travel. And often, many of these women are studying or working overseas, and their medical insurance may only cover the cost in that country and not over here. So women are also the primary caregivers, or they are the co-carers of their children. In the event that marriage doesn't work, it is imperative, it is important for that child to have a citizenship or same citizenship of the mother. Otherwise, how are the travel documents going to be renewed? You know, so it's essential that mother and child have the same citizenship. We started out in 2012 when a few mothers approached us on the issue. Initially, we thought it was a small number of mothers who were affected by this discrimination. We really didn't expect this huge numbers that started rolling in. And by 2015, we realized it was a bigger issue. And then we documented it in the CEDAW alternative report for the review in 2018. And the committee was very concerned, and they had a concluding observation to accord women equality in respect of citizenship rights in Malaysia. In 2018 and 19, we organized national consultations to create the awareness. We invited government ministries to participate. Actually, Moha has not come forward to attend our meetings. KPWKM had in that time come in. And in 2019, we did have them even speak. The then deputy minister spoke, as well as the Children's Commissioner has been very supportive. So this is a culmination of all the work for several years, decades really, that has gone in.
And it isn't just Malaysian mothers, like you've alluded to earlier, you know, with foreign spouses specifically, you know, it's not just this specific circumstances who face challenges, but also, you know, foreign women with Malaysian children, which brings me to the NGOs that you run. One of it is Family Frontiers. And another thing goes further back than that, which is the Foreign Spouses Support Group Malaysia. You've been running that for more than a decade now. Tell me about what inspired you to start this.
Foreign Spouses was started to support binational families, okay? And how did this journey start? It actually was, I had difficulty raising my Malaysian children. Frankly, as a foreigner, it was an emotional upheaval. because we used to get short-term visas. In the midst of having my child, I have to run, you know, to immigration my husband. And we were getting 6 months visas sometimes. And it is really a struggle when you're trying to earn a living as well. And in my mind, I wanted to help five other mothers, not more than that. Right. So I said we could share our experiences and support each other. And in my first meeting, which I called a few friends who were similar situations as me, there was one person in that meeting. And that person was actually only me. So I was really upset about it, but I thought, hey, let me try. At least years later, I will know that I didn't just give up. I tried a bit. I'm from an ordinary small town, and I did not expect that today I will have the responsibility of a community of foreign spouses whose numbers could well over be 200,000. And we support on our Facebook page, which is an online help desk, approximately 20,000 foreign spouses and their family members are there. And we get about, during COVID last year, we had about every month 500 inquiries coming in on various issues. So it's been hectic.
On the show with me today is Bina Ramanan. She's the co-founder of Family Frontiers as well as the Foreign Spouses Support Group Malaysia. After the break, I'll be talking to her about the defeats that she has faced as an activist and what keeps her pushing forward. What has kept her pushing forward all these years? We'll be back with more on Good Things, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Good Things. I'm Dashran Johan and my guest today is Bina Ramanan. She's the co-founder of Family Frontiers. And we're talking about Bina's journey in activism in light of the monumental ruling by the High Court yesterday, which declared that children born overseas to Malaysian moms are also eligible for Malaysian citizenship. Bina, now you're from India. Yes. You came to Malaysia in 1992, if I'm not mistaken. Why did you decide to come? And what did you learn about the reality of the situation involving transnational families when you arrived?
I was a naive bride. I had a good career going there. And I made my husband check up. He went to immigration and checked, and they said, oh, in 5 years, she can get PR. They never said that 5 years, she has to sit at home. And I was not about to give up my career, you know, and stay at home. And that's my prime time. I mean, who would want to give up their prime time? Mm-hmm. I expected that in 5 years, I would get PR, which means that it'll allow me to work and give me a certain amount of independence. Well, that didn't happen.
Is it true that it wasn't until 2007 where you were deemed eligible to apply for a settlement? Can you perhaps shed some light on that?
Okay, so actually it started one day when I had to take my daughter to hospital and she was having an asthmatic attack. And I took her, she's having breathing difficulties, her lips were turning blue, and I just put her in the car and ran. My passport would always be in my handbag. But what happened was when I went there, I was shocked when they said, well, you're a foreigner. We don't know that your child is Malaysian. And therefore, they wouldn't admit her until I had to call for my husband to come. And I said, this is critical, you know. We shouldn't be going through this kind of difficulties. It could be life-threatening. And that's how I started. And until then, well, I started working because I didn't want to give up my prime time. You know, we are in precarious positions when we come from overseas. You're coming to a country where all your support systems don't exist anymore. You have to build them up, right? And I loved working. I loved contributing to society. I used to work in the hospitality industry. I had a very good job. And therefore, I wanted to work. You know, it's my prime time. And I wanted to also supplement the income of my family so that my children would have, you know, the best life they deserve and the best life I could afford to give them. But it didn't happen that way because throughout there were difficulties in getting jobs because there are severe restrictions on work. Mm. And at that time, when I went for my, to get a PR application. Remember, those were the days there was no helpline, no nothing. We had to go to immigration and collect the forms. Quite often, amazingly, those forms would be out of print. Okay, so it means you have to go another time. And, you know, in the midst of all your, you know, your busy...
How did you do that? How did you manage that?
It's very burdensome, you know. And then I said, to heck with it. It's okay. I will continue my life as it is, you know. And then there were other things when someone said, oh, you were working. You were on a work permit. That does not make you eligible to apply for a permanent residence. Nobody had told me. There were no documents available to say, you can't work. You know, it's not clear. There are no clear guidelines. Man, I've got two Malaysian children. If anything were to happen to my husband, you know, I would have to leave the country, leave them here because I don't, you know, they have Malaysian documentation. So it was a very frightening situation, really, for all of us, even for my children who would ask me questions once they were 7 and 8. Amma, you're going to immigration. Then, you know, what's going to happen if they don't give you your visa? You know, it was really a difficult time. It's an emotional roller coaster for us, you know. So finally, I think I applied in 2007 because it was becoming too difficult. Mm. You don't hear anything at all except that your application is still in process, you know. And I waited, and I think by the time I actually got my permit masuk, which is called, after we went to a meeting, you know, and in that meeting, that was the last time we actually met somebody from KDN. It was a meeting with the deputy home minister at that time. And, you know, and I said, well, it's okay. Maybe I will get PR posthumously because I want PR. And I had actually left a message with my family that if I die, please bury me in Malaysia. At least then I will get permanent residence. And that was how it was. So then anyway, quite fast after that, I got my permanent residence. Thankful for that. I mean, you see, this is the country we raise our children. Yeah. Eventually, we also want citizenship in the sense that I have nothing back home. You know, my two parents, yes, are there. And, you know, eventually there'll be no support systems for me at home. You know, and this is the country that I've lived for most part of my life.
Did you ever, while you were struggling here, and I can only imagine, right, you know, running to the immigration office, you have to go for work, you have to take care of your kids, then they say no form, come back tomorrow, then tomorrow they'll say line up again, take the number, and then you go there and then they will say lunch break. I mean, it's ridiculous, and you have to go through that for years and years. Did you ever just contemplate, was there a point where you were like, I mean, this is too much, easier if I just go back home?
Yes, I did. I'll tell you, I did. And so as I was making my decision, I spoke it out at a meeting where there were a lot of senior women, women activists. And I said, it's too difficult for me. The road is too rocky. I want to leave, you know. And after that, I just went back to my car and someone called me back. And there was this lady on the wheelchair. She called me, she said, come closer. She held my hand and looked into my eyes and said, this country needs you, girl. Stay back, stay on, fight, she said.
Wow.
And I said, what did she see in me that she asked me to stay back, stay on and fight? And also my children, you know, said that, oh, Amma, we are so used to this country. And I thought, I can't tear them apart, you know. To go, and I knew how difficult it was for me to get uprooted and come here and, you know, adjust to life here. And then I'm doing that for my children. And I'm not sure if my husband's going to, you know, adapt as well. So, you know, that's when I decided, well, I have to stay back and make things work. I said, I lost my prime time. Mm-hmm. Okay, I lost my prime time. I don't want another generation of spouses to lose their prime time. Let me help people along the way. But it is still difficult for spouses in Malaysia.
Well, I can tell you, Bina, that honestly, right, I'm pretty sure that the mothers, with Malaysian mothers with foreign spouses or just couples and families in transnational and binational marriages, they're grateful and just glad that you stayed and fought for years and years and years. It is both incredible and just incredibly inspiring. What are some of the other challenges that couples and families in transnational marriages face? Because I'm guessing that, you know, no two couples, the situations are exactly the same, right? You have couples with varying education backgrounds. There are some who, you know, they are in different countries. There are some who, you know, they might not speak English as well, for example. So it might be a little bit even more challenging when they are here. You know, all these various situations. Talk to me about the challenges that couples and families in transnational marriages face.
Okay. Do you have the whole day, Darshan? Because it could take a long time for this. So we'll start off with when the couple gets married. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, there are still a lot of discriminations that the Malaysian woman and women in transnational marriages face. So you have women, a Malaysian wife who's married with a foreign husband, and you have a foreign wife, a non-Malaysian wife who's got a Malaysian husband. Now, in terms of the foreign husband married to a Malaysian wife, he faces a lot of difficulties, and actually it impacts the Malaysian woman a lot. And unfortunately, a lot of these marriages don't work so well because of all the difficulties, the bureaucratic inconsistencies. And you were so right when you said, when we did a study, we realized that no two people had the same experience. Mm. So first of all, the foreign husband does not get a visa for the first 6 months of his marriage. So if he's from any of the Asian countries, he only has a one-month visa, which means he has to make repeated trips out of the country. And that's discriminatory on the Malaysian woman who bears the burden of, you know, paying for finances, paying for the air tickets. They have to sometimes repeatedly exit the country and return. And now during COVID, of course, the government, thankfully, the immigration has been a little bit considerate, so they don't need to leave and they get extended periods without visas. Then the inability of spouses to study on the spouse visa. Okay, they are asking them to come out of the spouse visa, go on to the student visa, and then ask them to leave the country some more. Okay, but they have Malaysian children. On a student visa, you cannot earn a living, right? So why ask them to change your visa when people on residence pass and expats are allowed to work? And this is something I don't understand. Who are these spouses? They are immediate family members of the Malaysian family. They have Malaysian children and Malaysian wives to support. Why is that understanding, you know, not there? It's just not there. And so you also have the severe restriction on employment. So although immigration says you can work, the visas come with a statement that says any form of employment is strictly prohibited.
Right.
And that's on the visa of a foreign spouse. Any form of employment is strictly prohibited. Some of them are professionals. Some of them have many children in the country. They've been married for many years, and yet this statement is on their visas. It can be removed. Immigration tells you that, hey, guys, you can work, but you have to work in the same state. Imagine if you're in the state of Malacca and you get, or Negeri Sembilan, where many people from Negeri Sembilan work in KL. And you can't do that. You have to have your job in the same state. And then, you know, every time you change, you have to go back to immigration to get a change. And then you cannot have a license. You know, there are a lot of professional licenses that you cannot get till you get permanent residence. You cannot practice law. So my friend got a PR when she was like 56 years old, who's a lawyer.
Wow.
Right? Yeah. And there were women who were crying when they heard that actually they could work, but they didn't know about it because a lot of people do not know. Mm. So if any foreign spouse is here listening and think you cannot work, actually you can get, if you get an offer letter and the other documents, registration documents, there's a checklist for it, and take it to immigration for some of the employments, you will get a permission to work. So please don't be unemployed thinking that you cannot work at all, because these are talents that are coming into the country. These are people who have been educated even overseas with some specialist careers that they have, and they can bring innovative ideas. Why are we keeping them idle resources for the country, when the country can earn, they can contribute to this well-being of their families, right? The burden of earning an income won't be only on the Malaysian, but it'll be on both of them. And they can contribute to the taxes, right? And therefore, they should be utilized for the country and absolutely, the benefit of the country. And then the third point, which is really a difficult situation, is for those people whose marriage, you know, today marriages don't work 100%. There are a few marriages that don't work. Mm-hmm. Even Malaysians face the same, right? And more so with binational families. And what happens is, even if you have joint custody of your child, a non-Malaysian parent has to leave the country. So they cannot operate on, they cannot live in the country. They don't get a visa, right? They either have to get a work permit or something like that. Mm-hmm. But if it's a Malaysian, I mean, if it's a non-Malaysian mother as well, some cases, because it's all case by case, they're not able to remain in the country. So some of them are just become undocumented and overstay, right? And because they want to be near their children. Mm-hmm. And it creates, you know, the best interest of the child is both parents to have joint, you know, they have, the judge has given joint custody, both parents to oversee the upbringing of the child. And then maintenance, child maintenance also will become difficult. If the foreign husband has, you send him out of the country, even locally you have, you know, estranged husbands who don't pay for maintenance of the children. What more if they are overseas? How is the Malaysian mother going to collect, you know, maintenance for the child maintenance? During COVID, many families were separated and denied entry into the country. It's still going on for months. Last year, there were many who were separated for 7 months, 8 months. Women are left, Malaysian women are left alone with their children, facing crisis, facing, some had to deliver their children on their own, right? So while we understand the concern for public health and well-being, but the families, the well-being of the family should come first. Certainly. There should be unity of the family and best interest of the child. Yes, the policy on binational families, it needs to be reviewed, revamped. So what is then Family Frontiers all about? So we decided that we needed a registered entity to look at the operations of not just foreign spouse support group, but also the Malaysian campaign for equal citizenship, and to ensure the well-being and holistic development of Malaysian families, which also included Malaysian binational families. And so as the numbers of Malaysian mothers were, you know, and their difficulties were growing, there was always a pushback. There was no solution being offered to these mothers. You know, like they could have been offered like a permanent residence. It was not being offered to them. Long-term visas, each of them get like a student visa. So we couldn't see any kind of solution being offered. And that's why, and during the COVID, it gotten worse because women could not come in to deliver their children here as borders closed. So they had to give birth overseas. So that actually prompted us to take up the case. It was never our intention, because our intention was actually to work with government and see how this solution, we could find a solution.
What are some of the steepest uphill battles you faced throughout your journey in activism?
The challenges we faced was like the lack of engagement between government and civil society. Mm. And I just wonder why this should be, because we are, you know, civil society is in direct contact. They are the conduits between the government and grassroots communities. And therefore, they should be focal points in government. They should be regular and consistent meetings and follow-ups. It's not happening. Yeah. Otherwise, we wouldn't have this situation where there's a disconnect between people. And then the other thing is the lack of funding when we work on vital issues such as women's equality and child rights. It deprives us of valuable resources to equip the organization and to, continue sustainable work with our communities.
You know, the thing about activism, you know, you hear it from many activists, and I'm pretty sure it's the same for you, right? Activism, in your journey throughout activism, you know, there's a lot of defeats. There's a lot of fighting, which, doesn't bring, you know, the big rewards that you're hoping, you know, it would gain, right? There's many defeats, very little to celebrate throughout your journey. So in throughout your journey where, you know, things, you know, you push for something and it doesn't get through, you push for something else and then it doesn't get through. Members in various administrations of the Malaysian government, they're not working with civil societies. You feel like your voices are not heard by the policymakers, people in parliament. What keeps you going in the face of defeat all these years? What kept you going?
Well, I knew if I have to back out for somebody else to learn what I know about the community would take years. And to, you know, and also that the community needs a voice. So this is what I want to tell young activists. The country needs you. The community needs you. You need to be their voice. And this is a beautiful country with so much potential. We need to come together to build it to greater heights. And that's what keeps me going, is the future, the next generation. They need something to, you know, to grasp. They need, otherwise life is too difficult, and we need to make it easier for the next generation. And, you know, and I'm really impressed with the youth of today, because, you know, they are vocal, they are voicing out, and they have so many talents which can be utilized.
Now that the court has made, you know, this landmark ruling, what else would you like to see change in Malaysia with regard to the rights of transnational families?
There needs to be a review of the law and make it more contemporary, because these laws were made long time ago. These policies also were made a long time ago. It needs to reflect contemporary times. You know, people are working remotely today. Allow longer term visas, allow more stability to immediate family members. That is something that really is necessary, you know, and for to have a government that listens to the people, listens to the voices of the people.
As we wrap this conversation up, Bina, would you have a final message that you'd like to leave us with?
I first would like to acknowledge and give a huge word of thanks to all the senior activists who would have traversed a very rocky road. Some of them even went to prison, we know, right? Because they were, some of the activists went under ISA, but they created the smoother pathway for us. It's not easy, but it somewhat smoothened the pathway. It's not as rocky as it was before. They encouraged us, they built us, they built our capacities, they give us full support, and we would not have come so far without them. So this is a huge acknowledgement and a word of thanks. And I'm so grateful to all of them, you know, our senior activists in the women's rights movement who walked this path. And I also would like to say that the media had a very important role to play in this. They have to continue to highlight issues that face society, Malaysians and the society. And it is their duty also, right? And in this, the media really played a very big role. And in bringing reforms, that is what the media needs to do, is to highlight issues that need reform, like how they did with ours. I mean, look at BFM, how many times our Malaysian mothers have actually been speaking out their lived experiences on BFM. I mean, many of the mothers have come out and spoken, and that's how the society at large will come to know the issues. It'll also prevent them from coming into the same situation, and it's good for the well-being of society as well. And we also ask for companies and organizations to contribute towards the development work that goes on. And thank you, BFM, most of all, for having me here and listening to my story, and to encourage all the younger people out there. You know, it starts with one, and then you have the multiplier effect. Now I have so many people, so many volunteers, interns, stakeholders who are ever willing to help. So if you believe in an initiative, go ahead with it.
Thank you so much for joining me today. And thank you for the hard work and the relentless effort that you've put in for more than a decade.
Thank you, Darshan.
That was Bina Ramanan, the co-founder of Family Frontiers. If you missed any part of the conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashrath Johan, and this has been Good Things, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.